to me it's just the same old song. So just watch, cause my name is Shock. I like to rock and you can't stop this. Tupac, go ahead and rock this.
Now I clown around when I hang around with the underground girls. Used to frown, say I'm down when I come around. Gas me, and when they pass me, they used to diss me.
All right, back here on Sports 1140 KHTK. Jason Ross here with you on this Friday, and it's time to see the return of Pro Rodeo to Marysville this Saturday and Sunday. For ticket information, go to MarysvilleStampede.com. Busy weekend at sports coming your way, including tonight, A's baseball right back here following us. We'll get you to pregame coverage at 6, first pitch at 6:40 or so for the A's and the Angels. And it's been a while since we've talked to the voice of the Oakland A's. It's a pleasure to bring in Ken Korak here on the show. Ken, how are you today?
I'm well, Jason. It's great to be with you.
Well, we appreciate that, and I know the season is getting closer to the end, but the days are winding down, Ken, with the A's still in play here. It's really been a wild season. How would you characterize the 2021 year?
It's a great question. And, you know, at least they're alive for the postseason. You think of even the disappointment they've had recently with the bullpen and the struggles they've had. At least they have a shot. There are a lot of teams in baseball that wish they were in the A's position, although they're going to have to play great down the stretch. I mean, the thing to me that has been strange is that the bullpen has really had a tough time. And during this run under Bob Melvin, where they've been to the postseason so many times in 3 years in a row, of course, the bullpen locked the games down late. And so it can be really deflating when that doesn't happen. And I guess maybe ironically, because it's, you know, I think, you know, they still have a shot to get there. But I think in looking at the lineup they have now, they might have the best suited lineup for the postseason they've had in many years. Now the question is, can they get there? And that's a big question right now.
Yeah, that's what I was saying earlier, Ken, about this team. That's where the puzzle is. I like their versatility. They can beat you with speed now. They can get a few more guys on base. They certainly still have the big fly ability. But it is the bullpen. And just from the get-go, Ken, how different do you think this would have been had Trevor Rosenthal been healthy from day one?
Well, he was going to be their closer, assuming that he had good health this year. So we don't know. I mean, he had a good year last year. It was a bounce back for him. He had 2 or 3 years where he struggled and also, of course, had significant health issues. But the A's really felt that he had passed all those tests and had bounced back during his time, you know, last year with the Royals and the Padres. So, sure, it could have looked a lot different. He would have given them a hard thrower. And that's one of the things about this bullpen is that in a day and age when it's like almost every club is bringing guys out throwing 98, 99, the A's pretty much don't have that. So they have guys who rely on finesse and guile. And so I think Trevor, you know, certainly would have helped from that standpoint for sure.
Yeah, in this last 3 or 4 weeks specifically, they've had that 4-5 run type lead, 6th, 7th inning, and they've lost too many of those games. And I knew it was kind of one of those years, or at least Bob Melvin must have felt like that when Yusmeiro Petit couldn't even close some of the, or save these. That's where he's been right. So good in the last 3 to 4 years.
Well, I was talking to Bo Mel the other day, and he said he's never been through this during his time with the A's. And then you kind of ask yourself, who do I trust down there? Who's reliable? And just to amplify your point, Jason, in the last 15 games, the A's are 7-8, and they've lost 5 of those games, even though they've scored in those 5 games 6 runs or more. You know, they lost the game when they scored 8 runs. They've lost when they scored 10, but they still have a shot. So,
yep.
And they're, you know, he's going to be optimistic, and they really have bounced back. They've had some brutal losses, including the game on Tuesday at KC, and they bounced back and won the last 2 games. And so they might get Chris Bassett back maybe this week in the rotation. I'll have to wait and see about that or next week. And so, you know, they've offensively, they've really come alive. So if the pitching can bounce back in these last 2 weeks, who knows?
Ken, you brought up the Kansas City games. I know you'll call any game anywhere, anytime, but they do it a little differently. And I say differently, it's probably what baseball used to be. They put the ball in play. They play small ball. They steal bases. It seems like they're one of the few that relies on that. Did that feel weird? And those ended up a couple of 4-hour games you guys had.
We had a 3:59 on Tuesday and a 4:02 on Wednesday. And then a quickie of 3:28 yesterday afternoon. So the only thing about that is that Salvador Perez would kind of go against the grain from what you're talking about. And he tied Johnny Bench, of course, yesterday for the most home runs by a catcher in one season. So he's had a sensational year. But historically, you're right. If you look at the Royals, because Kauffman Stadium is really a big ballpark, they had their great clubs. And when they won the World Series in 85, they had, you know, speed, defense, they could steal bases. So they're you know, much more of that kind of a club too, even though Perez has had a great year.
You mentioned earlier, Ken, Chris Bassett. I was in the car listening to you on the call when that comeback, or you could hear it. I mean, that was what was so frightening. Then when I actually saw it, it was as bad as I had imagined, as bad as you guys described it. He was having such a great year, and the fact that he might be coming back, what kind of – not enough games really for him to have the biggest impact, but just his return potentially here, what do you think that does for the team?
I think just the fact he's been around too, and he's made a remarkable recovery, like you said, and it was scary. You're right. You could hear it through the broadcast. And then when he was carted off the field, and the last thing we were thinking about was whether he could pitch or not this year. We were just concerned about his health. But luckily, for if there's anything lucky about it, didn't hit him right on top of the head. So it didn't hit him in the skull. It hit him down below his eye. And he did have surgery for the bone fractures there. But he's going to throw a simulated game about two innings before the game tomorrow in Anaheim. And if he comes through that, I guess there's a chance that maybe next week he might get a start. So it would be a big lift, and especially because right now the A's need their starters to come through, and it goes hand in hand, the starters in the bullpen. As you know, Jason, the better the starters pitch, the less of a load that the bullpen has to carry.
Is Chapman going to give it a go tonight, you think?
He's in there. He's in there tonight. Elvis is not in there. He got hit by a pitch late in the game yesterday, right on his ankle, and he was grimacing. He did actually wind up finishing the game. So, and I haven't talked to Bob Melvin yet for the manager show that's coming up. Going to do that in about an hour and 15 minutes. But, yeah, Chapman is in. Elvis is out.
Okay, as the A's get the Angels tonight. A couple guys that you said, like, lengthening the lineup, a different kind of lineup, Harrison, Marte. I love those guys. Any chance that those guys are Oakland A's next year?
You've got to spare like $60 or $70 million for Marte.
Oh man, he's going to get it, won't he? He's been awesome.
He's going to get an unbelievable contract, I think. You know, he's in the last year. Well, it's an option year that the Marlins picked up on his deal, and he was reportedly making about $12.5 million this year, Jason. And I think he's going to exceed that next year on a long term deal. So I would say it's doubtful. Enjoy him while they have him.
Yeah,
he's been as impactful a player as the A's have had. I always thought the acquisition of Jermaine Dye in 01 was the best deadline acquisition the A's have had, and Marte might be exceeding that now. I didn't really. You know, we saw him in interleague play and it's in spring training, but when you watch a guy every day, he's just had a sensational second half for the A's.
That's it. I always thought he was fine, nice player, but then he's here and can't. I mean, until just what the other day, he never gets caught stealing, makes acrobatic plays. He's energetic, athletic, it's just all the things you like. I mean, he's a phenomenal player.
And Harrison's brought that great energy, too, batting leadoff. It's also enabled them to move Canna down in the lineup, where I think he might be better suited because he can be a run producer. And like yesterday with a day game after a really long night, and Harrison goes out, has a great game batting leadoff. And so those day game guys who give the energy, that's really a plus. So yeah, it's been interesting. The thing about Marte, and there was a great story on MLB.com that Sarah Langs wrote today, and we've talked about it. He's like a man without a country because there's a good chance he's going to lead the big leagues in batting, but he won't win a batting title this year. So it's one of those weird, quirky things.
Wow.
But, you know, that's what he's looking at right now.
I know when the announcement was made that the A's were bringing in Chris Davis to a minor league deal, I thought, well, that's nice. He just doesn't have it anymore. I can't see him making it back to the big club, just based on how it kind of ended with the A's, went with the Rangers. But then he goes there, and Ken, you couldn't get him off the team because he was just doing so well at AAA, and he's done a couple of things here, but I still thought that was an amazing story for Chris Davis to get back to the big club.
He's in there tonight, too. He's batting eighth. The Angels are throwing a lefty, a kid they're calling up from the minor leagues, so he's DHing and batting eighth. I'd expect him to start tomorrow against the lefty Jose Suarez. Looks good to me. You know,
yeah.
He hasn't hit one out yet. He hit one down the line that he almost got out the other day here at the Coliseum. Hit one off the wall in left center for a double. So went the other way, pinch hitting, drove in a run against the Royals a couple of days ago. So, you know, he kind of looks like Chris Davis to me. So I'm glad they have
That's
him.
Great.
And I think he has picked up the club just having him around. So, and he has a chance because the A's are going to see a lot of lefties down the stretch here, maybe four in the next six games, I think.
Wow, okay.
So he's going to have a chance to play, yeah, for sure.
Talking with Ken Korak, voice of the A's. It's the A's and the Angels tonight, weekend set. That means Shohei Ohtani, there was some hope that he would pitch this weekend. Angels say no, he won't. He may not pitch may not the rest of the way. We'll see on that. But just you as a fan of the sport, you that's called his game, seen him play, how do you put his season and just what he's doing in perspective?
Well, it's awesome, and every superlative has been used, Jason, to describe what he's done and the fact he's pitching and hitting. And he's always been able to, you know, he's been able to hit this year, even during those times when he hasn't been able to pitch. Like, as you said, not pitching in the series, he's batting third and DHing. And, you know, his average has gone significantly down in the second half, but they don't, I don't know that, I mean, he might be wearing down a little bit. People have talked about that. The other thing is he's like the one guy that you say, if you're Melvin, if you're the A's pitching staff, you're not going to let beat you. So I don't know how many good pitches he's getting to hit, because the Angels generally are a free swinging team.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like about a fifth of their walks have been to Ohtani this year, which is crazy. And the A's have pitched the Angels great. And I would not expect Ohtani to get a whole lot to hit during this weekend series. I'd be surprised.
You know, Ken, you've seen all the teams now, obviously, this late in the year. And it seems like every team has had stretches. The A's themselves had stretches where they were playing the best baseball. The Yankees, the Blue Jays, all up and down. But who's the best team, in your mind, that you've seen this year in the American League?
Well, I have a short memory. So I would say right now the Blue Jays are playing the best of any team in the league. They are really good. They are outstanding, and they have good enough pitching too. I think they could make a long run. We'll see. They haven't secured anything yet, and they're in the battle for the wild card because the Rays are going to win that division. But they are really good, and they can pitch, and they're athletic, and Vlad could be a triple crown guy. So I'm not sure there's a clear-cut favorite. I thought Tampa Bay was a World Series team, and they may still be, but mm-hmm. The way the Blue Jays are playing right now, I wouldn't put it past them either.
And some of the things baseball's implemented and still may change, maybe the shift, extra innings with a runner on second. You like some of the things they've done or some of the things they've tweaked to the game?
I do. I don't mind it. I think that there's a great story that Jason Stark wrote in The Athletic today about the pitch clocks in the minor leagues. And what used to be known as the Cal League, of course, it's still basically the Cal League with a different name. And they have a pitch clock, 15 seconds with nobody on and 17 seconds with somebody on base. Now, I don't think that will be implemented next year. It has to be negotiated. The players have to go along with it. So if you're looking at like the most significant change that could come down the road, I think the pitch clock is going to happen. And it wouldn't surprise me if there was some changing to the rules regarding the shifts.
Mm-hmm.
I think that might be down the road as well. I think you may see some legislating of shifting as well.
Do you know, Ken, if players have a problem with, you know, a four-hour game? Does that bother players? Fans will say it, but do players like it or mind?
If you read the story today, it seemed that there would be some resistance on the part of the players who feel that in the big leagues, you know, things are so much more important and intense. Everything, you know, riding on every pitch and winning is much more emphasized than it is in the minor leagues. And they feel like, you know, they don't want to be forced to conform to a clock. They want to play the game, and that not having a clock is one of the charms of baseball.
Yeah.
Which it is. I mean, I'll concede that, but I think the games are too long.
Yeah.
I really do. And I never thought that I'd be in favor of a clock, but I think there's just too much dead time, not enough action right now.
Yeah, I remember a year or two, maybe a couple years ago, asking you about this, and you were in favor of it, the wild card. I think it was a situation where the A's were going to be a wild card team. They're going to win, 97 games, mm-hmm. and still feel the same way, too. I guess this year you could have the Giants and Dodgers both probably well over 100, and one of them's going to be a wild card team.
I like the wild card. I don't want more teams in the postseason. I think the wild card is the best way to do it right now, because you have three divisions, so you have to have one more team.
Yep.
So to play it off and have the one game wild card, now it's worked against the A's. They've had to deal with it three times. They're 0-3 in the one game scenario, but I do still like it, and I still like the fact that we don't live in a perfect world, right, Jason?
Right.
There's a lot of unfairness in the world, and if you're the Dodgers and the Giants right now, you're probably thinking it's not fair that you can have the second best record in the National League and you could be out after one game in the wild card, but that's what we have. And I do like the fact that it really emphasizes the importance of winning your division.
Yeah. Well, as you look ahead to this conclusion here, Ken, for this season with the Angels this week, and then it's the four with, you know, Seattle, Houston, you have a rough guess of how many wins it might take? What is that, 16 games that the A's might need to notch up?
It's a great question. I was talking to a good friend of mine, a real baseball person today, and you know, you do kind of want to take it every day. And if the A's win two and the teams ahead of them lose two, you know, now you're right back there, and maybe you're not thinking you have to win 92 or 93 games. But to me, I always thought 92 was the number this year, Jason.
Okay.
So that would mean 13-3, and that's going to be tough. Because, as you said, they're done with everybody in baseball except for the Mariners and the Astros after Sunday.
Yeah.
And that's all they have, and those are going to be tough games. So could you get to 91 and, you know, you'd have to go 12-4 to go to get to 91? You're going to have to – the A's are going to have to play great. No matter what the number is that we're talking about, they have no margin for error. They can't have a slump where they lose two or three in a row. They're going to have to – as Bob Melvin said the other day, Jason, he said, we have to play every game right now like it's the last game. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was really hoping the division would be a little closer. Technically, they're not out of that, but that's a big ask when you're that far. But they have six games with Houston. I guess you never know. But I'm glad that they still are in it, like you said, with the weeks to go here, and it should be fun. Ken, have a great call tonight. We're thinking of Ray Fosse as well and all you guys out there. So, everything.
Yeah.
Any latest on him? Everything going okay with Ray?
No, we believe it is. Ray's a pretty private guy. Okay. So, you know, I haven't really, you know, spent a lot of time talking to him and giving him his space.
Yeah.
And I think when the time comes, we'll have a better idea as to how he's doing. But I trust that he's doing well, and he's getting the necessary care. But we really do miss him.
Yeah.
Especially, I know our listeners do, for sure, Jason. But thanks for having me, and, you know, another great year with KHDK. And as you know, you and I have talked quite a bit. We really appreciate your support.
Well, thank you so much. We look forward to the call tonight. Thank you, Ken.
Okay, buddy.
All right, that's Ken Korak, the great voice of the Oakland A's. You're going to hear him not long from now as the A's get ready to take on the Angels. It has been an interesting year for them and the ups and downs of what they've gone through, and the fact that it's one specific area that really has derailed their second half. It's been the bullpen. I mean, the A's were leading the division at one point. Houston caught them, but the amount of games they have had, just really going back to that Giants series, right, which was mid-August, maybe even the series before that with Chicago, where they had leads, not the biggest leads against the Giants, but those were late-inning rallies by San Francisco. Then they had some of those other games where they had significant leads that they blew. The Toronto series was absolutely killer. I mean, that game they lost to Toronto 11-10 was one of the worst regular season losses I think I've ever seen. That game was in the bag. They blew it, got the lead back, and then gave it back up on a Simeon home run. So it's been all over the place. And, Chris, I know you're for what Ken Korak said. He doesn't like the four-hour games.
Oh, my gosh.
And I don't know why. It used to always be when they play the Yankees, they take forever, or they play the Red Sox and Yankees take forever. But the Royals just look at a lot of pitches, foul a lot of pitches off, run, sub. They do a lot of different things just to prolong those games.
And there'd be pitching change. I think there was like a pitching – every first pitching change was like before the fourth inning.
Yeah, which is abnormal. Yeah, I mean, obviously now they're changing things where you have to at least have three batters. But, yeah, I think you were in here. Yes, they're already doing a pitching change. Yeah, and it was, what, the second or third inning?
Yeah.
And then once you start that, now it's, okay, the bullpen's going all game. And that wild card thing, though, was still weird. I, as a fan of sport, I like the one game. It's like a game seven. Winner moves on. But for baseball, when you play so many games, and the Giants and Dodgers in this case, or play at least 162, maybe even 163, and one of them's going to be in a wild card. And, yeah, could still win that game. But I always think of the opportunity of losing that wild card game, and then they're out.
Well, no matter what, it's going to be unfair.
Yeah.
Because if you have a three-game series, then you're going to have a bye team.
And so they're resting too long, probably.
Yeah. And so that will be the argument of that you're resting too long. Ironically, what I think really helps the Giants and the Dodgers is because they have such a big lead, but the games still matter. Like, if they were in the NL East and they had a 20-game lead and, like, none of these games mattered.
Yeah.
Like, it's tough to turn the switch back on in the postseason.
Yeah, I mean, they're both playing to the end to try to win, and they've got baseball's best records going, where the American League, I think we'll say it's fair, the two teams that get in is the wild card.
Can I say I'd be very happy if the Dodgers won 103 games and only played one postseason game.
Like a lot of people would feel that way.
I would be very happy with that.
Yeah, and then wait, is the setup... Well, the other part of that is the wild card team, the wild card winner gets the best record, correct?
Yes.
So the scenario of, okay, we'll just give the division to the Giants. The Dodgers get the wild card against...
That would be great. It's the Reds. The Padres.
Right, the Padres. You want the Padres to beat the Dodgers.
I want the Padres to beat the Dodgers.
But the other situation is if the Dodgers won, then they go right there to play the Giants.
Oh, okay. So now that we're just making up scenarios, that would be fantastic. Giants and Dodgers both go on a slump. Padres win those games against the Giants to make it into the wild card against the Dodgers. Dodgers lose to the Padres. Padres beat the Giants in the playoffs.
That's what you want?
Yes.
You just want all the losses to happen. You're laughing maniacally.
200 win
combined teams.
Combined teams not making it to the NLCS.
Yeah, I could.
See, what's great is I made all the Giants fans happy when I said I wanted to see the Dodgers go out.
But then you made them mad.
But then I made them furious with that.
I'm thinking about, you know, and they always do this. Oh, you know, baseball wants it to be the Dodgers and the Yankees. I don't know that. Last year, Dodgers-Rays was great. That was a really entertaining series. We had Braves deep into the series. You know, baseball is very regional, but if you can get some big teams in there, that's great. But let's get just good baseball going. I love postseason baseball when, you know, pitches in the fourth inning, you're locked in. I'm like, uh-oh, leadoff walk. Here comes the big rally. And it's just a different mindset when you get to postseason baseball. So the Dodgers and the Giants are the only teams that have clinched. Milwaukee's in great position to win that division. Braves still looking pretty good to win the NL East. That wild card is still up for grabs in the National League. Houston should win the West. White Sox will win the Central. Tampa should win the East. So the American League divisions are pretty much wrapped up. It's just the wild card in each division. Looking for your two spots. Jays and Red Sox own it right now with the Dodgers and the Cardinals. So postseason's fun in baseball. And when that gets started here in a couple weeks, to me, Chris, traditionally the biggest difference in postseason baseball, we'll always talk about starting pitching or that bullpen, like Ken said, that comes in and everybody throws 102. It's the error. It's the mistake. It's a base running blunder. It's a fourth inning error that lets the floodgates open. It's usually a miscue that changes a series or changes a game.
Also, I like midday playoff baseball.
Yeah. And that's probably what, traditional for you? Like, that feels like that's something you watched as a kid?
Yeah, like the first games, like the first series, the division series, when you'd have like that 1 o'clock start.
Yep.
They can't do it because of TV, but it would be great to see that, like with ALCS, NLCS, like a 1 o'clock start.
The weirdest one for me the last couple years has been when they get to the playoffs and they might have, you know, they're kind of staggered those first couple of days, and then you get to maybe Saturday and Sunday and all four series are going, especially when it's Sunday and there's four baseball playoff games going on an NFL Sunday. And there's usually one or two that I totally forget about. I go, oh, wait, Texas just played, you know, Minnesota?
What's bad is that Sunday games, of all the games, it's still kind of in the background.
Yeah. I know baseball still has that trouble against football, but there's been numbers lately when they get to the World Series, how well they do. And again, I think a lot of it depends on what the storylines are, who's in it, what are we looking at when that comes around. So thanks again to Ken Korak for joining us, talking about the A's, talking about the postseason, and hopefully the A's will be a part of that. When we come back, we look back at last night's thrilling Thursday night game. The Giants yet again 0-2. Washington found a way to win thanks to the Giants gift wrapping the game. We'll talk about that, play some audio from there as we continue with more here on Sports 1140 KHDK. Back here on Sports 1140 KHDK, Capital Casino is now open again with their outdoor gaming venue at 411 North 16th Street in Sacramento. Jason Ross here with you. Thanks again in the first hour to Will Graves, reporter for AP, who covers the Pittsburgh Steelers, giving us a preview of the Steelers and the Raiders Ken Korak, voice of the A's, joining us in our last segment as well. Coming up in 30 minutes, get the latest on high school football from the Sacramento Bee. Joe Davidson, not only high school, but Joe, I saw him last week at the Sac State football game. He's covered Davis as well. So we'll talk about our local teams and high school football coming up. That's at 5 o'clock here on KHTK, and then A's baseball at 6. Still Tell Me Something Good and the crossover as well. So lots of things for us to get to. But let's go back to last night in the Thursday Night Football. Also in our next segment, I want to tell you about some of the games in Week 2 that are deceiving games. And I'll explain what that means on the schedule here. Because, you know, after 1 week, we make assessments of all these teams. But I've told you before, I'll tell you again, the NFL is a week-to-week proposition. We learn more about the teams each week. Our opinions change on them. We'll change rankings. We'll feel differently about players each week. And so that's why I want to get into some of the deceiving games that are on the schedule this week. We'll do that coming up in our next segment. Last night, the Week 2 action started with a good game, good finish. Washington got a second crack at it when the New York Giants were offsides after the missed field goal. And then Washington found a way to win, so another crushing loss for the Giants. And let's get some reaction from both sides on this, because this was a tough night for the Giants. And here's their coach, Joe Judge, about that false start or that offsides by their lineman, Dexter Lawrence.
I'm not going to put this on Dex. And I don't want to put this on Dex. Okay, Dex is a good player. He's a strong piece of our locker room. He's a good teammate. He's fun to coach. He's productive for us as a player. I'm not going to put this on Dexter Lawrence, okay? There's things we all have to do better as professionals, all right, but I'm not going to put this on any one player or one situation.
Yeah, and he shouldn't. I mean, it was a mistake. That's what we all see, and we're all going to blame the Giants and him for that. It was a collective mess. The Giants, again, I don't know how many times that they were gift-wrapped this game. Too many field goals late. They scored plenty of times. Just kept settling for field goals. When Taylor Heinicke threw his only mistake, his turnover, what, with 3 or 4 minutes left, deep in their own territory, that was just an absolute killer. Second down. So he gave them great field position. They could either exhaust the clock, get a touchdown, end the game there. They settled for a field goal and just left the door open for Washington to do what they did at the end. Now, speaking of doing what they did at the end, someone's got to be the hero. Ended up being Dustin Hopkins, who made the second kick after missing the first one. Here's Dustin Hopkins after the game.
Somebody out there check on my mother. She's probably had a heart attack.
Yeah, he missed the first kick. That's the life of a kicker where, yeah, you're celebrated as a hero, but probably get more of the blame. The balance doesn't quite even out enough, I think, for kickers when they do well. Gano had a good game, the kicker on the other side for the Giants. But the winner here was Washington. And Ron Rivera talked about that late mistake that Heinicke made and how he really bounced back from that performance, because that was one that really probably should have ended the game for Washington.
The thing that was real impressive about him was the way he bounced back after the turnover. You know, prior to that, you know, he went down in three plays and scored a touchdown, and then we turned around and we were trying to kill the clock. He made a bad read, made a bad decision. He should have put the ball in the back's hands, going to the flat instead of trying to throw the curl. And, James Bradbury made a heck of a play. But getting that opportunity, he stepped up again.
You know, we say the term game manager, which is what I think a lot of people said with Alex Smith. The defense is going to keep Washington in a lot of games. So if Heinicke can develop and continue to be productive, I think that's what Ryan Fitzpatrick was going to provide Washington, a guy that's got all sorts of experience, can make a few plays or enough plays to keep you in games, hopefully not make the mistakes that hurt you in a game. And Heinicke's final stat line, 34 of 46, 336 and 2 scores, that critical interception that ended up not costing the game, but getting better as the game went along. Those key drives late in the game kept answering the Giants' moves. That goes a long way. Now, I saw people today, has Washington found their quarterback? No. And I'm not saying he's not the answer. It's too early. It's way too early on Taylor Heinicke. I liked what he's done. He has yet to play that many games. He's yet to play a road game, I think. I don't think he's had a road opportunity. So he hasn't started that many opportunities. He's had injuries in his career. He's got good experience now. He's been around. He's been around this team. He's been around programs. He's got an idea and a core concept of what you need to do to play the quarterback position. But the next time he comes out, if he has a bad game, I don't think we're saying, does Washington have their quarterback? You got to give him some time. And we're not talking years, just a few more weeks. Let's learn more. Let's see how he does against different kinds of defenses. Washington's defense is, or excuse me, the Giants' defense is just okay at best. They're going to face some different defenses coming up here very soon. I think they go to Buffalo next. Yeah, Buffalo. They're going to see the, you know, then they're going to be in a game with the Chiefs where maybe it's a high-scoring game that he's got to match Mahomes. I don't see that happening. Packers, Broncos coming up, Buccaneers. They got a difficult schedule. They got a first-place schedule for a team that somehow won their division. So I liked what he did. Heinicke should feel good about his performance, but I would say it's way too early to say they found their quarterback. I don't think that's the case at all. And I think when Fitzpatrick's healthy, barring any kind of just miracle run here by Heinicke, it might go right back to Fitzpatrick. But here's Heinicke after the win.
First start was, what, 2 or 3 years ago in Carolina? Threw 3 picks, tore my tricep. It was just a brutal thing, and that was my last start until last year, Tampa. Come in Tampa last year, had a good game, but ultimately fell up short, and then finally get that first win. So it's nice to get that weight off your shoulders, and hopefully we can keep the ball rolling.
Yeah, it's his first win. Again, congratulations, but let's let him play a little bit. Let's see some. Let's find the warts. Let's see the mistakes. Let's see the successes. That's what you got to do. You got to figure out is the totality of his work, of his resume, and we're still in its infancy at this point, but he's got the job now. He did a good job last night, helped him lead him to a win, and on the other side, the Giants are trying to figure out what went wrong. Here's more from Joe Judge.
I say this all the time, and you guys kind of think I'm just giving you coach speak. Like, you come in my meeting on Monday when these guys get back, regardless what the result was tonight, the meeting's the same meeting. This is what we did positive. This is what we have to correct. This is where we're going to be going forward. This is the focus as a team. You got to keep it here. Look, I understand on the outside world, it's that kind of greatest of all time, worst of all time. It's that emotional roller coaster. Everyone wants to go ahead and it's doomsday, you know, or you're the greatest thing in the world every week, right? That's just the nature of it. You got a week in between games. Ain't Major League Baseball. It's not the NBA. It's in a deal where you turn around next day and you just go ahead and you play. So we got to go ahead and understand the truth is on the tape. The things we have to correct, they're right there in front of us. The things we have to do better as a coaching staff to put our players in better position, they're right there on the tape. The guys we're going to use to have success, they're right there in our locker room. You know, we got to make sure we just keep focused on what the process is to do it.
And that also gets back to what I was talking about as a week-to-week proposition. I thought the Giants looked awful the first week against the Broncos. Broncos won 27-13, but it was pretty easy. Giants were at home, didn't look like they had a lot of life to them, didn't get a lot going. Last night, at moments of that game, I did think they looked good. There were some good elements that improved from week one to week two. But you got to start getting in the right side of the column there in the win column. So next up, what do they do in week three against the Falcons? And again, back to they're coming up in our deceiving games segment, in our next segment. We make these opinions, we make these judgments, but it's matchups, it's preparation, it's who's healthy, how do you come out in those games, turnovers. There's so many factors that determine a game just based on who can win as opposed to, well, they're 1-0 and they're 0-1. I'm picking the team that's 1-0. It's not that simple. Who did you play the week? How did the matchup go? Where were the mistakes made? So the Giants, I think what they should feel good about from last night was I thought Daniel Jones looked really good. I really did. I thought he had his moments and opportunities there. He had the run that was called back. Here's Joe Judge on his QB.
I saw him do a lot of good things. Get the ball out on time. Throw some good accurate passes. Throw some good balls in a tight coverage. Obviously push the ball down the field. You know, on Slayton's touchdown, he made a heck of a heads-up check right there. That was Daniel on the line right there communicating with Slay and getting him going right there. He saw something he liked, took advantage of it, and obviously produced points for us.
Yeah, that was the touchdown, but also Slayton dropped the touchdown. I mean, those different things pad the stats more for Daniel Jones, ends up with a better stat line, and ends up likely with a victory. That's how fragile it could be in the NFL. And I thought Daniel Jones ran the ball effectively enough, and his final stat line, he was the leading rusher with 9 carries, 95 yards, and a score. Had that long of 46. And then he was 22 of 32 for 249. Didn't turn the ball over. Got sacked 4 times, but 1 touchdown should have been 2. And the 2 would have made a difference. They would have won the game. We're talking about a 1-1 team, and we'd feel much differently about the New York Giants. Now, the other part, I think, of the game that stood out is the way the Giants' frustration has already been hitting. There's a couple of reports. I don't know that the players seem to be truly in love with Joe Judge, their coach. I think he's no nonsense. I think he's pretty serious. And I think that can be a style that can work. doesn't land as well when you're losing, and they lost last year, and they're 0-2 this year yet again. I think it's the fourth or fifth straight year they're 0-2. So that's a tough – there's tough love there, and that's tough to break through when you're got to wait a week to play and kind of dealing with the more of an aggressive, intense coach. But the sidelines, there was internal feuds going on, a little bickering, including stuff that we could see that was shown on television. Kenny Golladay, a new member of the Giants, looked like he was yelling at the sidelines, certainly at maybe Daniel Jones' direction as well. Here's Daniel Jones after the game talking about kind of what was going on there.
He was frustrated at the situation. I don't really think it was to me or anyone in particular. So I think, you know, we're all good and love Kenny. I thought he played hard and you know, did a lot of good things out there.
A win will help. A win will help it all. That's how it always works. They need a win. They might get one next week. Golladay's final line, 3 catches, 38 yards. He had targeted 8 times, but that's what they need. And the difference in that, I mean, you could just see the example of the last, 2 seconds, was when Washington missed the kick. They're deflated. Giants are happy. Flag on the field. Fans, so, oh, home fans, new life, offsides, chance for another kick. Kick goes in. That one was hanging on that left upright right for us on the TV side when it goes in, and pure elation and then dejection from the Giants. That swing, one of the teams is going to be 1-1, one's going to be 0-2, and the Giants are on the wrong side of that. Washington feels much better about themselves. And really the 2-week total, now you the cumulative, Washington could have won last week. Chargers came back and beat them. And then Washington did win this week, so they're 1-1, feeling much better about the way the 1-1 looks. Even with a quarterback that started the year being out, they've already gone to a backup who played well in week two, where the Giants are still going behind Daniel Jones. They have Saquon Barkley. They added Golladay as a nice weapon to their receiving core of Slayton and Shepard, and weren't competitive in week one and in a game last week or last night that they could have won that they didn't get. So it's that fine of a line between how you feel in the National Football League. So when we come back, we're going to talk about week two and kind of along that line of thinking, games that you might look at if you're picking going, oh, that's an easy one because this team has this record, this team has this record. That's a win. Or is it? We'll tell you about this, a couple of deceiving games in the NFL this week when we come back here on Sports 1140 KHDK. Done, Chris.
That was actually Angie.
That was Angie? Crushed it. Crushing it. That's the jam right there. Back here on Sports 1140 KHTK. Happy Friday rolling into the weekend. That's a good way to go into the weekend right there. Man, we got A's baseball coming up at 6 o'clock. Thanks again to Ken Korak, who joined us here to start this hour. Last hour, Will Graves helped us preview the Raiders and the Steelers. And coming up about 15 minutes or so from now, the great Joe Davidson. It's a busy night of high school football coming up around the region. We'll get the latest from Joe. Also, UC Davis, Sacramento State, they're off early on to their season. So Joe will talk about all those things. Joe's been just an institution in our area for so long. So we look forward to checking in with Joe D starting at 5 o'clock. Crossover in the next hour. Tell me something good as well to wrap up the week. I think that you have to play that song to tell me something good again. That was great. All right. This week two of the National Football League has some deceiving games. And what I mean by that is the natural thing. And if you're in a survivor pool or fantasy or even a maybe like a pick 'em where you just make picks each week, you'll one of the ways you probably do it is maybe you take a look at the point spread. That's there for a reason. But when 1 week of action has been played, point spreads move a little bit based on what we thought about a team before the season started and then certainly what we got out of week one. Now, week one does not make a season, and there's a couple of examples of this that logic would tell you. For example, the Rams, who are 1-0, go to the Colts, who are 0-1. The Rams, I thought, looked pretty good Sunday night against the Bears. they were. I thought they would win. It was not a surprise that they did. But Stafford and just the offense looked good, crisp, clean. It was a nice performance by the Rams. Colts, on the other hand, was my upset last week. I thought they would beat the Seattle Seahawks. Russell Wilson and crew, they looked great. They just really took it to the Colts. So you look at that and you go, okay, Rams 1-0. They looked good. Colts 0-1. They did not. Not so fast on this one. Watch out for this one. This one, again, deceiving game. Everything we've seen in 1 week would say Rams win this one on the road. Still a travel game for the Rams. Colts are a better team than they played in week one. And credit to Seattle. Seattle made them look bad. What does Wentz look like in a second week with that offense? The Colts personnel is really pretty good all the way around. Rams got the lead on the Bears, did a good job there. Watch that game as a potential, I don't know if it's a major upset. The Colts are 3.5-point underdogs here, but that's one on my list of deceiving games based on 1 week of action. Most people say Rams easy, they've got it in the bag. You know it's the NFL, you've seen it. If you followed the NFL for any amount of time, every weekend there's a game where you go, man, I didn't see that one coming. We told you earlier in the week, there was underdogs last week won 12 of the games. Covered 12 of the games, excuse me. They won 9 of them, I believe, outright. And last night, they had a cover as well with the Giants, who were underdogs. So the NFL generally plays close games. This is a close spread. Rams, Colts, deceiving game. Watch out for that one this week. Another one along those same lines. Vikings and the Cardinals. The Vikings played better as the game went on, but lost in Cincinnati in overtime. The Cardinals looked terrific. They had one of the better weeks in week one. They just demolished Tennessee. So here you go. Cardinals coming home, coming off a great win. Chandler Jones got 5 sacks. He's going to get 5 more. This team's incredible. Well, they might be. We need to see more than 1 week to establish that. Again, if that's week 8, you'd go, wow, good win by the Cardinals. We're very early in the season. I think before the year, maybe people would give a slight edge to the Cardinals in a game like that, just being at home. But Minnesota's got talent, offensively, specifically. So that one is another one of the deceiving games. I don't think it's as easy to say, oh, Cardinals 1-0, Vikings 0-1. This is put in the book. It's over. Cardinals win. Deceiving. Bengals and Bears. Oh, my. Bengals, I don't know that they were that impressive last week, but a win. I do like what Joe Burrow can bring them. Mixon, one of the guys that ran for over 100 yards on that short list of running backs that got over 100 yards, but they needed overtime. They won. They're 1-0. The Bears, 0-1. And the Bears kind of got some of their stuff going later against the Rams, but this is one that I've seen more people pick the Bengals than the Bears, though I do think the Bears are the favorite here. But another one of the deceiving games that I'd like to see more from each team before I have a better overall feel on how each one will do. But watch this one as a deceiving game. And then my last one on my list, and there's probably more than this, but these four jumped out to me. And the other one is going back to the Seahawks and going back to the Titans based on the way both played last week. Seattle was very good. I already talked about how impressive they were against the Colts in Indianapolis. Now they come home, which is traditionally a very, very tough place to play for opposing teams. I thought the Titans were just awful. I don't know if they tried to change schematically things because Tannehill's a good quarterback, not one of the elites, but a good quarterback. They add Julio Jones. They already have A.J. Brown. They've got Derrick Henry, and they just couldn't get going. The Cardinals owned them, and I know they're better than the way they played. So, again, here's a team, and looking at this point spread, Seattle's favored by 6.5. Titans are a much better team than they played last week. Seattle had a great matchup, and it's how do you match up? Where does the first mistake go? Is it a short field? Is it a block punt? We talked earlier with Will Graves where Buffalo was leading a lot of that game, and then Pittsburgh scored block punt. A few plays later, they score on that, and it flipped the game. And I think if Buffalo and Pittsburgh play each other 10 times, Buffalo wins 7, maybe 8, not last week. So the deceiving games, because each week, and I'll be here Monday, and we'll go, man, I did not see Team X defeating Team Y. It's just some things, it's not as predictable as you think the league is. Sometimes it falls in line. But year in, year out, week in, week out, there are upsets to some level. I mean, we're not talking, it's rare that a team is a double digit to 15-point favorite in the NFL. That's how close the talent is. But
funny how I seem to get that from my Survivor League loss every year.
What, a double-digit favorite? Did that happen to you last year?
Yeah.
Who was that?
Who it was.
Oh.
It was one of those like, wow, there hasn't been a
14-point favorite to lose like this, yeah. And they completely lost. Because at that point, you don't care if they cover the spread. You just need a win, win by one. So I think those are the deceiving games to watch this week. There's a couple of games that I feel better about. I really expect the Packers to just regroup and just thrash Detroit. That would be my expectation, but we shall see there. I think like the Buccaneers, like the Browns this week. The Patriots against rookie QBs traditionally have done very, very well. Look for them to do well against the Jets. Bills-Dolphins is one that's going to be fun to watch because the Dolphins found a way to win. I think the Buffalo is good. I told you, that's my Super Bowl team. Look for Buffalo to bounce back this week. So we'll see how that goes. I already gave you earlier about the Niners and the Raiders. I don't like the Raiders this week in Pittsburgh. Short week, emotional night on Monday night, and now the injuries. Josh Jacobs being out, some linemen injured. Pittsburgh's front's going to get after the Raiders and control that game and look for the Niners to get to 2-0 behind a balanced offensive attack and just enough defense against Philly. So looking forward to the games this week and looking forward to recapping them when we're back on Monday. When we come back in the next hour, still to come, the crossover, Tell Me Something Good. And Joe Davidson from the Sacramento Bee tells us what games we need to be following here in our high school region tonight and some players and surprises so far in the early season. Also, we'll check in on Davis and Sac State. All that and more with Joe Davidson when we come back to start our final hour of the week. That is next here on Sports 1140 KHDK.